This is a commercial-free archive edition of our live radio show that airs every Friday at noon Arizona time on OpenMinds.tv.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandro has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome. This is Alejandro Rojas and you are listening to Open Minds Radio, where we're bringing the UFO subject into the light of day. We've got a great guest today in studio, Dr. Ruth McKinley Hover. Not the Dr. Ruth you're thinking of, but instead someone who has done a lot of work, decades of work, helping people with the abduction phenomena. We've had others on talking about this, and Ruth is local here to the Phoenix metro area, so we'll be talking to her about her experiences. So I'm really excited to talk to her. I've known her for a little bit now that I've been out here, been seeing her at all of the events. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll be talking about that in just a few short minutes. But I did also want to talk about the magazine, of course. Our magazine, Open Minds Magazine, is out. It is at all of the Barnes and Nobles, so you should be able to check it out. We sent people to local Barnes and Nobles to make sure they were there, and they are there, and they're really cool. So we've got a lot of great response on how great they look, so we're excited about that. We've got stories in there on the White House and the current administration and their UFO connections. We've got information about abductions. We also have information about a group of kids, and we'll probably be bringing up Dr. John Mack, who is a Harvard professor, a psychologist who looked into abductions, but he also researched a case in Africa where some children were at school and they saw a craft land, and this entity came out of the craft and they were able to talk to it. So those kids are older now, and so in our magazine we have a story on what was going on with that. We've got a lot of news because, of course, we cover UFOs in the news, and so you can see a lot of those headlines. And as usual, before we talk to our guest, let's talk about UFOs in the news. We've got our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, with us in the room. Jason, give us some updates.
Good Friday afternoon, Alejandro. Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Friday, April 2nd, 2010. A European probe has discovered the first planet orbiting another star that resembles a planet in our own solar system. The planet, known as Corbett 9b, named after the planet-hunting satellite which discovered it, and it resembles Jupiter in size. The planet is cool enough to contain liquid water, creating the possibility of life, and its temperature is estimated to be between 73 and 314 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
You know, we spent a lot of time talking about Virgin Galactic and mm-hmm. the new space tourism that's coming very soon. And I can just imagine people planning their trips to this planet they think is going to be a comfortable 73 degrees, and they get there and it's 314 degrees.
Yeah. You have to go in winter, that's for sure.
That's right. In other news, the UK's The Sun reported this week on a video that has appeared on YouTube of a UFO captured by a police helicopter's infrared camera. The video was shot on Christmas Day in 1994 and shows a spherical object racing through the skies over Long Beach, California. Smaller objects appear to come out of the main object, and some believe the video shows an alien spacecraft releasing probes, while skeptics say the object in the video was simply space debris burning up in the atmosphere. There's been no comment from Long Beach police officers regarding the strange video.
Mm-hmm. It's a great video from a police officer, a police helicopter, so It's a few years old, and The Sun is just kind of picking it up, but it'd be interesting to see more from that one.
Also in the news, the Australian Bureau of Meteorology found a mysterious pattern on the national radar system. What has been described by some as resembling crop circle patterns, the Bureau describes the imagery as red stars, rings of fire, and white donuts. The Bureau explains the strange imagery as occasional interference to the radar data. when you look at the strange visuals that they're getting on this radar system, it's bizarre. It seems strange to be just an error in the radar system, but it apparently is happening quite a lot, and they can't explain it.
Yeah.
Some of it they explained by clouds interfering with the system, but in a lot of these pictures, there are no clouds.
Oh, that's really weird. Yeah, I haven't looked into that one much.
Yeah. In other news, after being sworn to secrecy for nearly five decades, former CIA contract workers from Area 51 are free to tell their stories about time spent working at the location of so many classified projects. Area 51 was the test site for many secret military aircraft, including the A-12 and its successor, the SR-71 Blackbird. James Noce, a former CIA contractor, recalled several government black projects, but says he never saw anything connected to UFOs. However, he says the government did mine stories about aliens and UFOs because they helped cover up the secret planes they were testing at Area 51.
Yeah, it's still, you know, I don't think this guy only worked there for 3 years. He worked a shift, and usually they don't let everybody see everything going on.
Exactly.
So I'm sure there's a lot more going on that these guys weren't able to see.
And those who were involved, you're right. Would have been few people. Not everybody at Area 51 would have known everything going on.
Yeah, usually you only know about your one project, and that's it.
Right.
And it sounds like these guys only knew about the A-12 precursor to the SR-71, and that's it. That's the only thing that they talk about.
Yeah. And in entertainment news, the 1982 classic E.T. was recently named the greatest children's movie ever, beating out modern blockbuster hits like Shrek and Finding Nemo. The poll was conducted by marketing research company OnePoll, with E.T. in the number one spot. Toy Story, Mary Poppins, The Lion King, and The Wizard of Oz made up the top five children films of all time. But with E.T., it's interesting thinking back on E.T. and then thinking about all of the children movies that have come out in the last 2 years and how many of them are alien-related.
Yeah, a lot of them. And, you know, when we get Dr. Ruth on here in the next segment, we'll talk to her about that. Being a psychologist, I know she's worked with children.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk more about that because they thought this thing was going to be too ugly for kids. Kids were going to freak out because of this ugly creature. But no, you know, everybody loved it.
I loved it, and I know watching it when I was growing up, it certainly was a movie that made me start watching the skies.
Oh, really?
I remember that, you know, starting to look in the sky and wondering what was out there, what other things were out there, and when was I going to see something else?
Yeah.
It also started my love affair with Reese's Pieces. But
I think that's true for a lot of people. Yeah. But, I mean, that's how I felt. You know, as a little kid, I already had seen Close Encounters convinced me. So
right.
I was already watching the skies, and then to see this, it's like, wow, you know, what's out there?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it from the news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Great. Thanks, Jason. So we still have a lot coming up. We've got Dr. Ruth McKinley coming up. And I also wanted to mention the Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore. We are going to be there Friday evening at about 7 p.m., we meaning all of Open Minds and our editors, to be there to answer questions about UFOs, to talk about UFOs, to meet the public. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be on April 30th, which is a Friday evening at Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore, and that's at 2225 North Scottsdale Road in Scottsdale, Arizona. So 2225 North Scottsdale Road. They have a lot of really cool books there. They always have some psychics there. They have some beautiful clothes and jewelry, so it's definitely a place to check out. And I believe this weekend they've got their metaphysical fair going on. So you can go there and meet with writers, meet with psychics, things like that. So that's 2225 North Scottsdale Road, visionquestbooks.com. So that's an event that'll be fun coming up here because I know some people have been wanting to meet who are the people behind the magazine and the radio show that makes up Open Minds. They're also carrying our magazine, so I've already talked about that. And also, I want to remind people that you can go to our website to see all of those news stories that Jason had mentioned and more. So we update that on pretty much nearly a daily basis if I'm not sick or in Mexico or something. We update that on a nearly daily basis so you can see the latest and the greatest going on there. And also, you'll be able to see stories on UFOs and the like, such as One of our feature stories that we have up here is a UFO wine that was inspired by a flap in Chateau de Popas, if I'm saying it correct. But essentially, it's pretty cool. What had happened was there were a bunch of sightings in this area in France and all over France in 1954, big UFO wave. And this vineyard decided that they were going to make it illegal for the UFOs to land in their vineyard and to affect their grapes at all, so they wouldn't have their wine affected at all. So they made a decree. The mayor said it's illegal for them to land here, and it worked because they didn't have any UFOs landing there. But there's also a wine by Bonnie Doon made that is in recognition of this event. So pretty cool. Check out our website, openminds.tv, to see more about that. We'll be back in a few seconds with Dr. Ruth.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
We are back, and we are going to be talking alien abduction with our guest, Dr. Ruth. Hello there.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. And to start off, you are a doctor. Is your doctorate in social work or psychology?
Psychology, clinical psychology.
Okay, so you're a clinical psychologist as well.
Right.
Which is a helpful background to have, especially in this field.
Even if for only your own sake.
Yeah. So in your history, how did you first come across the abduction phenomena, and what did you think of it back then?
Background is always overdetermined where you end up. It was a surprise to me when John Mack called me from Harvard and said, how would you like to join the program for extraordinary experience research? And at the time, we'd been traveling a lot. We worked for a travel company, so we'd been to like Egypt many times, Peru many times.
Wow.
And all the questions that you stack up in the back of your head, here was somebody calling up and saying, hey, join the club and we'll tell you more about this and you can learn more about it. So it was a slam dunk. I was part of the research community from then on.
What did you think of the whole idea of people being abducted by extraterrestrials at the time?
Actually, it wasn't too, quote, alien to me, because I read copiously. I have a giant library. And I was just thinking how overdetermined our adult lives are, because growing up, I had an obsession with finding out all the secrets. And I end up a researcher that's researching the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
There are no accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And our travel, when we went to Peru, specifically Peru and Egypt, gave me the most insight into that what we learned in the history books isn't real history. Crop circles, too, and in England, because I believe that the crop circles are the communications we are getting, and we are only now beginning to determine what the crop circles are saying to us.
Mm-hmm. So when had you heard of, when Dr. Mack called you, had you heard of the idea of alien abduction?
Yes, and I'd read a few things along with, you know, reading everything as it comes into print. And I knew of him, but I was not part of his peer program, which when he invited me to join, obviously, I joined immediately. And we're really going to miss him. He was an advanced mind on the planet.
Yeah, unfortunately, Dr. Mack has passed away just a few years ago, hit by a drunk driver. So very unfortunate, and I loved his books. I definitely recommend people to go read what he's written on this field, because he was a very advanced thinker.
The name of his book, Abduction, everybody should have that.
Yeah, for sure. And he was looking for answers and beyond kind of just the black and white, whether it's a physical thing, whether it's a just purely mental thing. He was very advanced in looking into what might be going on and drawing parallels with shamanism.
And he looked at, in all areas, nothing, he didn't close his mind down to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in going to the crop circles, he had the same experience that I had, which is, these are so deliberate, there's a message here. And only in a very few of them have we literally decoded the message. For example, there's one that is obviously the solar system. And the first time that that crop circle appeared, you saw all the planets in their orbital patterns, but Earth was missing. And if that's not a strong hint to listen up, I don't know what is. 5-6 years later, the exact same crop circle appeared in the exact same field, except this time Earth was in its own orbital pattern.
So that's probably a good sign.
That's a good sign for me, as far as I'm concerned.
So when you started working with people, did you feel or do you feel that this is definitely a phenomenon when it comes to abductions that's a physical, there's a physical component to
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Reality-based.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's in your bedroom in the middle of the night and you're by yourself, you know it's real,
mm-hmm.
and you're scared to death. No matter who you are, you're scared to death. And John Mack was willing to look at that and to listen to people. And I think he did more to get people to work through their fear and listen up, because we have a whole different body of knowledge now about what they're telling us and how they're telling it to us than before he started looking at the abduction phenomena. And the abduction group I ran for the larger Phoenix area, it ran for 11 years.
Wow.
And these are people, every single one of them have had some kind of an abduction experience. And that's mm-hmm. not small potatoes, you know.
Yeah. So if there is a typical scenario, what would that be? What do people describe to you happening to them?
Usually it's waking up at night and feeling sleep paralysis. That's like a loud bell that says, oh, I'm lying here, am I asleep? I can't move. And then they become aware of something else or someone else in the room. And from then on, it's not confabulation from a psychological point of view. Mm-hmm. They are not making this up. They are describing something that is so overwhelming to them they can't make sense of it. And when they get around other people who've had the same experience, you can see their anxiety level drop, and then they begin to talk about it. So I think the event happens, people are scared, and as they talk to other people with similar experiences, the fear level drops and curiosity sets in,
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot of really good data from people who have been visited.
Mm-hmm.
Or traveled.
Now, the visitors, are they typically the same type of being, or they're often different types?
They're generally the same type in your bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and I call them the escort committee. They're the popular little grays.
Uh-huh.
But there is a lot of education that takes place, and that is of all different kinds, tall, skinny ones. The best visual the general public has, Bob Dean and Whitley Strieber got inside Area 51 and they snapped a picture of an alien there. It's on the cover of Robert Collins' book, Exempt from Disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And the picture's cropped, so all you can see are the big eyes and the head. And if you look at the original photo, it goes down to right below the neck. And it's a very disturbing picture because quite obviously on this little, tiny, spindly being with a big head, its neck has been wrung. I mean, it's twisted like mm-hmm. a rope. And sources tell you, we found it in a crashed saucer. But I kind of wonder. And at Area 51, they had it inside in the lab for study, and it expired during that period.
Mm-hmm. So that's the most common type, the escort committee that people
right.
see. And then they begin an educational process with a lot of different types of
the beings. Tall, thin ones.
Mm-hmm.
And information drops into your hands. You know, you go to the bookstore and the book falls on your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And more people are describing their experiences. And less often you find their books, not in the occult department, but in ancient history,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of fascinating to me. That
yeah. Now, what sort of information are they is being portrayed to these people in the educational process?
A lot of it is, we're here, we exist, get used to it, or get over it.
Uh-huh.
The other one is almost like a missionary zeal that you guys are trashing your planet. Stop it and stop it now. You think very differently about the tree huggers and the programs that are going on, because that is basically what they're telling us. We share this universe. What happens here is going to be important to us. It should be even more important to you, Earthlings. Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because in that South Africa story that I had talked about earlier with the little kids, even the little kids, they didn't receive any sort of communication, but just from looking at these beings, they got those same messages that we're destroying our planet and we
yeah.
need to take care of our planet better. And it's interesting to see these little kids talking about that.
Well, it looks like we have developed the ability to hear telepathically, and I don't think there are a lot of people who can communicate telepathically, but there are a few. So
yeah.
I think that's their method of communication.
Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Dr. Ruth about abduction, so stay tuned.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back. This is Alejandro, and you're listening to Open Minds Radio. I want to remind people you can call in during our next segment here, and that's going to be at 602-277-5369, or toll-free if you're not in the Phoenix metro area is 1-866-536-1100. So give us a call in a minute if you want to ask a question. I have a lot more questions for our wonderful guest today, Dr. Ruth McKinley-Hover, who is a clinical psychologist and working with abductees. And I wanted to ask about the procedures, the medical procedures that often people describe during these experiences.
The medical procedures would appear, from all the reports and all the writings, would appear to be geared towards reproductive issues.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's really scary if you're an abductee who gets carted off and laid on a table and procedures performed on you. But it makes sense in an intellectual way when you realize that what the Greys have told us is that their race is weakening and may be coming extinct. And I think, from working with Dr. Mack and reading copiously, that most of their visitations have to do with reproduction. I mean, I think they're desperately trying to save their race. I think, yes, they take sperm and eggs. Yes, we see that as indignities. Nobody asked us. And yet it strikes me that if we knew what they knew and information were openly shared, we might be thronging to clinics to donate stuff to them if they really think their race is about to become extinct.
Yeah, well, why don't you think they just don't ask?
Mainly because they don't talk like we do.
Mm.
It's telepathic communication,
right,
which hits you like a ton of bricks when somebody looks at you and you can't tear your gaze away. Those big eyes. Early research I did was about chemtrails and crop circles. And the minute I got into this field, it grabbed me in a different place. It wasn't intellectual. It was emotional, gut level. And you end up knowing what's going on with yourself and a better understanding of what's going on with others. But much of the writing comes from fear, and it seems to me that the deeper you get, the more compassion you feel.
Mm-hmm. The deeper you investigate?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. The more you find out about they or them, mm-hmm. or where they're from and what they're looking for. We are so independent in this country that if somebody takes a sperm or ova sample from you and they didn't ask, we are just highly indignant. And a lot of the fear is centered around how dare they? And that's our kind of, and when you say you have no right, one of our abductees raised up on the table and found his voice and yelled, "You have no right." And this little tiny gray doctor looks at him and he says, "Of course we do. Yes, we do." And the guy just shut up.
Uh-huh. Well, they talk, even when you talk about reproduction being involved, also this idea of hybridization, these people seeing these hybrids, is that sort of the method you think they're using?
I think it's one of the methods.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're desperately searching for a way to extend the lifetime of their race.
Mm-hmm.
And when you meet a desperate person, you're usually a little afraid of them because you don't know what they're going to do next.
Uh-huh.
And there's this air of desperation and an air of entitlement.
Uh-huh.
The thing that most abductees are the most afraid of is I have no control over what they do or don't do,
mm-hmm.
and they feel entitled.
Right.
Who are they? You know, we Americans have a great sense of entitlement.
Right.
You know, we think we're the it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real learning experience to be confronted with beings who, you know, it's like, I'm your doctor. Shut up, lay back, and, you know, we're doing what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. So these people who go through these experiences are traumatized, obviously. How do you help these people cope with what's happening? And then where do they get to? Do they get to a place where they're okay with what's going on?
They do. Where you work with them is they have such a block talking about it because it is such a scary experience for mm-hmm. them. It's like the world's worst nightmare, and you wake up in the morning and you think, God, that was a terrible dream. And then you look down and your night clothes are on backwards and inside out, and there are funny marks on your arms and scoop marks out of your shin bone. That's pretty appalling from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can talk that out and you can put them in touch with other people who've had the same experiences and they talk to each other, they start reminding of each other of, well, did this happen to you? Yeah, and back there I saw such and such. And as they talk to one another, they begin to feel sane again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they begin to be able to manage it. And once they can manage it and just live with it, then they start looking for the meaning in it.
Do they find that their experiences, once they talk to each other, are very similar?
Very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Some, and this is interesting, more females than males have the experience of being abused or raped or violated. Males quite frequently get an educational boost. They get taken and shown things, and they can't figure out what they're seeing. But over time, it makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your dreams are polluted a lot for a while, but as you let go of the fear and talk to other experiencers, which is what happened in the experiencer group, they started to realize that some of this experience makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one lady in the group who wakes up and she goes, oh, no, I'm so tired, not tonight. And she sees the little figure run over to her dresser drawer, pull out the bottom drawer, rummage around in it, take out some of her lingerie, throw it back in, and then exit.
Hmm.
It's like a response to her, don't take me this time, you know, just take what you need. And they're just looking around.
Mm-hmm. Are there times like that? I mean, are people able to sort of over time communicate like this situation here?
The communication is a toughie because obviously we run off at the mouth and mm-hmm. they have no idea what we're saying any more than we have an idea what they're saying. But if you can quiet your fear and look directly at them and they look at you, there's something about those big eyes mm-hmm. that when they look at you, it's in your head. It's telepathy in the only way I know how to, and it probably it's a very green experience for most of us who are not naturally telepathic, mm-hmm. but they can put thoughts in your head.
Interesting. So when it comes down to the hybridization and then the experimentation, along with these educational messages, what do you think is their primary motive? Is it to share information, or is it to, or is it the experimentation?
I thought about that a whole lot, and I was talking to one of my experiencers, and she said, "What's our motive in putting a man on the moon?"
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that who's visiting us are the scientific types for the same reason we go to the moon
mm-hmm.
and get out and walk on the surface and take pictures of Mars. They're no different.
To go see what's there and go see.
They just have better ability to get around the universe.
Right. They've got some pretty cool craft.
Yes, they do.
So with the physical marks, you talked about like scoop marks, which are, could you explain what scoop marks are?
Scoop marks, when you wake up with one, you think you've been kicked in the shins. They're very sore, and they have scooped out. It's like taking a melon baller and scooping out some flesh and tissue. And the common one, and one of the ways that I use diagnostically, is a series of red dots up and down your arm and legs. And I figured out that those must be restraint marks because when I did gang work and we had some kids in psychiatric hospitals with the restraints, those restraints left the same marks on the body as some of the body marks I see on abductees.
Wow. Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back from our break. But right now we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Ruth McKinley Hover. And we're talking about alien abductions. You're listening to Open Minds Radio on KFNX.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back. This is Alejandro, and the phone lines are open. So if you would like to ask Dr. Ruth your own question, give us a call at 602-277-5369. That's 602-277-5369. If you're not in the Phoenix metro area, call us at 1-866-536-1100. But before you were cut off, we were talking about scoop marks, and you were talking about some of them are similar to restraints.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Marks from restraints.
Well, and what we're told by abductees who remember as a horrific experience, if you're taking it in and laid on a surgical table and restrained, and then they come and do medical procedures on you, that no wonder we're scared to death.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah, that's kind of a freaky prospect.
It is. And, you know, I used to think of myself as just a little old lady social worker. But once you get into this business of educating yourself about it more and more, you go back and forth. First, you think they're the bad guys. How dare they? Then you think they're the good guys. How dare we? And then you think, what does the government know? And mm-hmm. then you get all caught up in that, and that's scary. I am more afraid. I get good data from the government, and I'm very appreciative of unusual contacts I've had with the government. But I'm less afraid of the aliens than I am our government.
You know, it's interesting that I've heard from a lot of abductees the same thing, because unfortunately sometimes they claim they have had some problems with the government. Have you had the government harass you for the work that you've done?
I won't say it's harassment, but I have been visited, and I have also had to sign some security clearances in exchange for, you know, you have all this gall in the world picking me up and taking me here. Now let's do a trade.
Uh-huh.
And so I think they're working very hard to keep it secret because they've kept it secret for so long. There's a lot of dirty junk going on, mm-hmm. trying to keep the public innocent to what is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not always the good guys.
The humans?
Yeah. Humans are not always the good guys.
Right.
To me, it's 50-50 because some abductees describe usually the more frightening experiences with the very tall reptilian ones. And that is usually very scary because there's very little education. The movies are the cute little gray guys, the flying saucers, cartoons, books are always the little gray guys, but they seem to be the doctors. And there's a whole militaristic crowd that are like 7 feet tall. And I don't care who you are, if you're looking up at somebody 7 feet tall and it's the middle of the night and you're in your jammies, there is no equality there.
Yeah, that would be a little scary.
Yeah.
And so this is a reptilian type that is more military and not,
right.
as, not as nice as even the gray guy.
No, and they function apparently like our military does.
Mm-hmm.
Our military has to go in power, secure a location, do what they're sent to do, and then out. And in some parts of the world, our military is not even looked upon unless they can go in and stay there long enough that you make friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're very highly thought of
right.
as people. But generally speaking, people aren't relating to the aliens as people. They're
mm-hmm.
relating them to a nightmare because it's at night. You're not fully dressed, which makes you one down anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they have skills and telepathy and all these things that are utterly beyond you. Of course
right.
they're afraid.
Yeah. Now, with that, on the flip side, some of the educators, some of the more kindler, gentler aliens, what are they typically described as, appearance-wise?
The tall whites.
Mm.
Charlie Hall has written books about the tall whites. And the tall
right.
whites, we have whole families. In Area 51, it has to keep secrets because that's its job.
Right.
But if you are on... We used to have a conference once a year on the outskirts of Area 51. And, of course, we all took our best binoculars and everything when we did this. And you can see the tall whites walking up and down the faraway hills. And they appear to float. And there's children. And
you were able to see these as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But from so far off, it'd be mm-hmm. like if you're down the block and walking, and I could see that you're not jerky, you're kind of floating,
mm-hmm.
and there'd be parents, small ones, children, whole families. Those are the tall whites, and my husband is fond to say, yeah, Ruth knows all about the tall whites, but she never deals with the tall blacks because they're all in the NBA.
Oh, geez. Tall whites, Close Encounters, that movie,
uh-huh.
I often wonder at the very end, you know, they have the little guys that look more like grays, but they also have this big, tall, spindly kind of person coming out. Now, I often wonder if they were portraying a tall white.
Probably.
In that video.
Probably.
Because it was interesting that they had some help from their advisor, Alan J. Hynek.
Yeah.
J. Uh-huh. Allen Hynek, who was an astronomer who worked for the Air Force. So, and the correlation between the type of entities in that movie, we were talking about Spielberg and the movie E.T.
What did he know and when did he know
yeah,
it? Yeah,
what did he know and when did he know it? It would seem that, you know, they had some insight into what people were reporting as far as entities as well.
Well, and the truth is we have had other beings as guests of our government, in quotes, for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
The secrecy has been kept for so long now, I'm not sure it would serve any really good purpose to kaboom, come out with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they loosen and let people have their own observations of what's going on, they have no way of controlling. And masses of the population have mm-hmm. been abducted, many more than make it into print. There's a lady in Phoenix who's writing a color book for kids.
Yeah.
That shows the alien. So it could be that over a long expanse of time, they're slowly integrating into our culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that the researchers are aware of come, do their business, and go,
mm-hmm.
and are not around.
Well, I think that the movie E.T., being the number one children's movie now, that says a lot about integration and being accepting, because they were worried, I know a lot of people, like M&M's wasn't in the movie because they were worried that the alien looked so ugly that the kids were going to be afraid, so Reese's Pieces was chosen instead of M&M. But people, even though it was a very strange-looking guy, because of the eyes and its mannerisms, people were able to start to love this little alien guy.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're much more closely affiliated with aliens than most people realize.
Mm-hmm.
In the Phoenix Lights, you see this large triangular who wanted to be seen as it went right down our main corridor of I-17 and right back up with billions of people seeing it. But I think it's very difficult for you to acknowledge, if you have a spooky experience that's out of the ordinary, our culture is built around being one of the guys, you know, and not being different. We try very hard not to be different.
Right.
In other cultures, in England, and then when you go to Egypt or Peru and you see things that couldn't possibly be made by humans, there is no way. And stones that are laid together and you can't even get a hair.
Right, like in Peru they have a lot of those.
Right,
amazing.
And in Egypt, the Sphinx,
mm-hmm.
the pyramids.
Yeah, yeah, of course, some incredible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking online, that brought up something. There's a picture from Egypt where it looks like in these hieroglyphics that there's a helicopter.
Yes, there is. That's my picture.
Exactly.
That's my
You're
picture.
You're credited for that picture a lot. So
and
were you the one to discover that?
I was the one who took the first one, and
really?
I gave it out very generously to a lot of people. Neil Freer
uh-huh.
has it in his books and his talks. And
uh-huh.
It was 40 feet up.
Yeah.
So I held my camera over my head and snapped it, and I was just really lucky that this picture came out. And there's a submarine and a helicopter and what looks like a jet and another and that's been in all sorts of books. David Hatcher Childress, we were having coffee at one of Chet Snow's conferences, and I was showing him my pictures, and he says, "Oh, I want one." And so I handed him one. Cause,
so now it's all over.
It's all over
and
the place.
If you were to Google Dr. Ruth McKinley Hovery, most likely you'd come up with that picture. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a great show, really interesting information.
Thank you.
So it's fun to have you in the studio here. And be sure to join us next week. We're going to have Stanton Friedman, everybody's favorite ufologist. He's on all of the television shows. He is actually a physicist, and he's been researching UFOs for decades. So join us next week on Open Minds Radio. We'll have Stanton Friedman. Be sure to check out openminds.tv for news and information. This has been Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Thanks.
Nothing. You watch your feet for cracks in the past.